Hello and welcome to the Leading Chaos Podcast. I am Rhea Windcaller, your host of this weekly podcast where we take chaos head on and make it manageable. Chaos is disorder, confusion, and at its worst, pandemonium. No matter who you are, where you are, or what you do, chaos will appear when you least expect it. So let's get started. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. In this episode of Leading Chaos, I am thrilled to have Dr. Mark Vonnegut as my guest. Dr. Vonnegut studied medicine at Harvard Medical School and is a full-time practicing pediatrician. He authored two books, the first being his memoir, Eden Express, which made the American Library Association notable book list, and his second book, Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So, and that is published by Bantam Books. You might notice that his last name sounds familiar, and he is the son of the American writer, the late Kurt Vonnegut and Jane Cox. Dr. Vonnegut, I am so happy to have you on the show. Welcome to Leading Chaos Podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Let's go for it.
All righty. So in your book, Eden Express, which was published in 1975, you wrote that you had a genetic disposition to schizophrenia, and that diagnosis of your illness has changed, and now you consider yourself to be bipolar. Is that correct?
Well, it's by current diagnostic criteria. They have changed the diagnostic criteria, and I do think the usefulness of the official diagnostic categories is extremely limited, but by current diagnostic criteria, I fit better into bipolar than schizophrenia. I do not think there is a firm boundary between the two.
And just for the listeners, could you give a little bit of background what that diagnosis means?
Well, when I was acutely psychotic, like 40 years ago, you could diagnose somebody as schizophrenic, and I honestly think the schizophrenia diagnosis was because I appeared and was so different from the people who were taking care of me. I had hair down my back. I looked like an Old Testament prophet. I had been unable to eat or sleep for several weeks. I was down to about 125 pounds, so I looked very, very strange. And I think if I had been a little better behaved and a little better dressed, I could have made bipolar disease. But I do think it's a very subjective and not always useful thing to diagnose schizophrenia versus bipolar disease, because a lot of people over time change. I have people who were classic bipolar, and if they don't get well over time, they start looking more and more like schizophrenics. Mm-hmm. And there are people who have classic schizophrenia, in other words, they're not really manic or depressed, who over time seem to get better if they get good treatment. So I don't think the distinction really holds up over time.
Okay, thank you for that. I asked you to, if you would, read a piece from your book, Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So, and that would be from Chapter 9, which you titled Crack Up Number 4. Dr. Vonnegut, when you're ready to begin reading that, would you do so?
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
Part of what happens when one goes crazy is that there is a grammatical shift. Thoughts come into the mind as firmly established truth. There is no simile or metaphor. There is no tense but the present. The fantastic presents itself as fact. It would be possibly tolerable to feel like or as if someone was on fire, or like the CIA might be after you, or like you had to hold your breath so that you could be compacted and smuggled into a neutral site in Mongolia to wrestle India's craziest crazy. But there's no like or as if. It's all really happening, and there's no time to argue or have second thoughts. Without prelude or explanation, I'm in four-point restraints, in my boxer shorts, on a gurney, in a side hall of the hospital where I once trained and currently still work. I am a Harvard Medical School alum, Harvard Medical School faculty. I actually teach Introduction to Clinical Medicine and the newborn exam, and I didn't even get into McLean's, their teaching hospital. "Don't worry about me," I explained to strangers passing by. "The police way overreacted. As soon as my doctor gets here, they'll undo these silly restraints. Do you know that in a well-run hospital, restraints are almost never necessary?" Without being too self-centered and petty, I couldn't help wishing that they had either let me get some clothes or not taken me to the hospital where I was on staff. Or if they had taken me there, why couldn't they have put me in a quiet little room somewhere, anywhere but the hall, please? A nurse whose kids I had taken care of for years passed by looking afraid and like she might cry. "Don't worry," I tried to tell her. "This will turn out okay. It's probably possible to gain humility by means other than repeated humiliation, but repeated humiliation works very well. 14 years earlier, I'd fought my way back from being crazy with a lousy prognosis to write a book and go to medical school, finish an internship and a residency. Now I was married with two kids, locked up in a windowless room again. I was being treated with Haldol instead of Thorazine and weighed about 180 instead of 130. Long run, short slide. In a totally unscientific survey of registered nurses done right around the time of my fourth psychotic break, I was named the number one pediatrician by Boston Magazine. Truth is stranger than fiction. Thank you.
Thank you. That is such a moving piece. I have to admit, the copy of your book that I have is, there's so many quotes and so many very poignant moving notations of your life, and that one especially, I can only imagine what it was like to be in that hospital hallway being held in restraints. So thank you for reading that. You're writing the photos of you and your family members in that book, and of course your watercolors say so much about who you are without any words, and over time how things have changed. I'm wondering, how has your experience of chaos changed over the course of your life and your illness? Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
I have a lot. I have much greater clarity that the illness is separate from myself and my enemy, and in no way, shape, or form my friend. I think in my early 20s, when I started hearing voices, I was sort of excited. I thought I was going to learn some exciting things. I thought the process might be a benign one that was going to help me and my friends. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm. And in over time with this, the talking about the actual chaos, it's really, that's changed dramatically at the point that you are today. How do you experience chaos today in your life? You're saying that was 40 years ago. Of course, chaos could be a psychotic episode, but you're also a practicing pediatrician and you have chaos. Everyone has chaos in their life. How do you experience it today? Has it changed immensely on how you approach it as an adult in the world and being professionally settled as you are?
I love being a well-trained doctor, and I almost always can think of something positive to do. In terms of personal chaos, if I am noticing insomnia or any other of the things I consider sort of, things that lead more towards illness and psychosis, I have an awful lot of things I can do that help move me back towards health and wellness, most of them having to do with healthy connections with the world and people. And the arts. I think doing art, actually being creative, is the best protection against the disease's seduction, which tries to tell people that it will make them creative. So I have also definitely learned that alcohol and drugs are not my friends. And so I have a lot of, I have a lot of, positive things in my life. And I think, one of the best, protections against getting sick is to have better things to do.
Well said. in your view, with chaos, what doesn't work? And kind of going back to that piece of the chapter that you were reading, specifically for providers and crisis interveners, and this is kind of ongoing discussion now currently in our nation on the use of restraints and inciting people. Do you have any advice on that? What you see as not working in that type of situation? We know a little bit what you're saying to avoid, but avoid further if a person is having difficulty. And as someone who also works with children,
I think a lack of clarity is, you know, I think there's a very great tendency. I mean, the joke about psychiatrists is, you know, doctor, I'm feeling terrible. And they say, well, how does that make you feel? I do not think that typical approach is very, very helpful to somebody who is, in fact, lost and ill. I think we should and can be clear that the person is not alone, that other people have experienced things like this, that there is a lot of hope, that people can get better. And so what I don't think helps is people who try to protect themselves, who focus on risk management, payers who try to get out of paying, pharmaceutical industry who tries to, again, you know, their interest is in selling drugs, not getting people better. So I do think being compassionate and clear and competent about mental illness and knowing beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is not a myth. Mental illness is real and people can be helped. Mm-hmm. And if you can't help, get out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Getting even a little bit more specific there, you know, we have the imperfect system, the medical system, and it's forging, you know, moving forward. When you're, if you see a person in need or if you're in need, do you have any specific things that you do beyond the more global of staying away from the alcohol and the drugs, having that good support system? But sometimes we know that we are a little bit alone in the world. And is there anything, mm-hmm. anything actually very physically that you do for yourself or particular habits that you've set up for yourself over time or that you also advise others to do when things are getting a little chaotic?
Build and
go ahead.
Yeah. Maintain and build positive connections with people. I don't think there are any good, there is no recovery without positive connections with other human beings. And I think the way therapy works or hospitals work or medications work, and they can all be part of a solution, is that they facilitate and make it possible to have positive connections with other human beings. And I think that that's what the arts do as well.
And can you speak a little bit about the arts for yourself, what that means to you?
I think it's enormously helpful to be able to do something. And when you are in a disorganized or chaotic state, it is very, very hard to do things that you once were able to do, like cooking a meal, like attending to a conversation or whatever. But I do think, and one of the reasons I think that art therapy is so valuable in the mental health system, is you can create a piece of art and you can look and be proud that you changed the world by making art, and other people can look at that art and you change the world from one where you can't do anything positive to one where you can.
And it's a very tangible item that you bring out into the world too.
Yep.
Wonderful. And your particular art is the watercolors. Is there anything else that you do in that artistic frame?
I think in the writing, too. I am trying to connect with other people, and I think all good art is trying to make yourself and other people less lonely. And I think art is also, it's a struggle to try to tell the truth, and I think that that's the illness is often trying to tell you things that are not true, and struggling to try to tell the truth through art is what I think made my father's art so powerful, what made Dostoevsky's writing so powerful, what made Van Gogh's painting so powerful. They're trying to tell the truth, and they're trying to work in against the disease and not giving in to it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So just kind of framing this for our listeners who are always interested on tips for leading chaos in their own lives, I want to just kind of paraphrase here a little bit, looking at the art therapy, which sometimes is lacking at sites, but it's well said that doing the writing, as you have so well done in both your books, and finding something tangible to move forward with, having those really good connections with other people is critical. I just wanted to go back to that connection piece, because sometimes a person might have difficulty to know what is a good connection as opposed to a connection you think is good but might not necessarily be healthy. Would you have any advice on that?
Yeah, I think there's a huge value in sort of peer counseling. In other words, having people who have been through the mental health, been through the illnesses, and been through the various forms of help, who have a fair amount of wisdom. There are, I think, sort of quacks and prophets who prey on the mentally ill in an authoritarian way. And I certainly ran into my share of those who said, you know, who wanted me more or less to bow down to some religion or to them. And those are just sick people preying on sick people.
Mm-hmm. So finding those good connections, and maybe, if possible, pulling also on your family and working really well there. So I have another very kind of basic question, though, and looking at, again, going over chaos over time. But Dr. Vonnegut, if you could go back in time and offer your younger self advice, what might that be?
I think I would have... I did grow up in the 60s, so I would have had a little more caution, even though I was relatively a mild user of drugs. I would say to anybody who has my family history of mental illness that even relatively mild drugs like marijuana and alcohol are not likely to be long-term friends for you. I would have worked harder at more positive peer relationships. I think we were all to some extent rebels without a cause, and we could have worked harder at positive stuff. But it was a chaotic time. Believe it or not, the war in Vietnam was very real. Believe it or not, the National Guard actually loaded up live ammunition and killed college students. They were very, very, very strange time. And to some extent, I do think trying to be a good hippie, trying to start a good commune, those were very serious and good answers, and some of which were very, very helpful to me in my recovery from mental illness.
Nice. Is there anything on the forefront for you with your writing that you're currently working on?
I keep doing it. I keep working at it, and I am fascinated by the human condition, and I do think mental illness is a huge part of the human condition. And I'm currently working in two directions. One is trying to describe what another utter disaster the healthcare system has become, and what people can do outside of the healthcare system to take care of themselves and their friends. And the other thing I'm doing is sort of this novel about race over time, and sort of all the new discoveries that Neanderthals are not extinct. We have them as our ancestors, and so the working title for the book is The Last White Man. And we'll see. I think I'll manage to upset just about everybody.
Well, I certainly will be looking forward to that, and appreciate everything that you have written, and look forward to anything that you're doing. There will be links to Dr. Mark Vonnegut's books, Eden Express, and Just Like Someone Without Mental Illness, Only More So. That will be found on the Leading Chaos Podcast website. And I want to thank you so very much, Dr. Vonnegut, for providing a glimpse into your life, your experiences, and tips on leading chaos. And thank you so very much for being on this episode of Leading Chaos today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I did it. And I'm thrilled that the Skype thing actually worked.
Well, sometimes technology does come through. It's an amazing thing. Thank you again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow, another exhale, and I should have probably been exhaling a bit more during that actual interview, because I was so excited. I enjoyed that man's writing so much, and truthfully, I've never read any of his father's books, his father being Kurt Vonnegut, and that is so wrong, since Kurt Vonnegut is an acclaimed author, and somebody who is now on my to-do list, having read his son Mark's books. But there you have it. Sometimes we have to go in the back door to get out the front door. Well, thank you for tuning in. Please follow this podcast on Twitter at Leading Chaos. And do leave a comment, certainly about the show. I imagine it's got your head spinning. This is Rhea Wincollor signing off for now. As always, be kind, be safe, and exhale.